The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. It's the first weekend of the Premier League. What a weekend, as all the favourites win and all the underdogs lose. But it's the constants in life that keep us all happy. Manchester City are good, playing a high line against Liverpool is bad, and Arsenal's team selection is a bit weird. Elsewhere, the cigarette butt-chewing Maurizio Sarri is off to a good start, and as we all predicted, Richarlison is a big waste of money. In the Football League, Leeds are flying and a goose stops play in Macclesfield. And in the Scottish Premiership, Celtic have lost as many games as they've won. We'll answer your questions, have Feedback Corner, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. We have a panel today. Barry Glendenning, nice to see you.
Hello.
Archie Rintutt, German, not German man. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Mark Langan from the Racing Post. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Max.
Excellent. Kelly says, did anybody go to a nightclub this weekend after the discussion on Thursday that anyone over 30 shouldn't be allowed to go? Which means, Archie, you were still allowed to enter nightclubs. How many nightclubs did you go to this weekend?
I didn't on Saturday. I would have. But I got up at 5 in the morning in Cologne to fly over for the Fulham game. So I gave
Sleepy.
It a miss.
Did you have the opportunity?
Yeah.
Oh, which club?
I don't know what it was. I don't know what decision was taken by my mates in the end, but
okay,
I decided against it.
Sounds like an underground rave to me.
Eins, zwei, drei, techno.
I mean, I don't think Putney's really that kind of scene. But
oh, Fez Putney. You know.
I don't, is there?
Of course there is.
I mean, I think the show is kind of my level of nightclubbing as it is.
There was in 2005. That's what I'm saying. Before we get onto the football, Barry, there's been huge controversy and I am furious. I don't believe a word of it, but we got some stinging criticism, didn't we?
Yes, apparently someone was breathing during Thursday's show.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since, there have been accusations flying around, fingers being pointed. And we got categorical confirmation from producer Jonathan that the phantom breather was you, Max Rushton.
Well, I mean, we don't know if producer Jonathan has an agenda, do we? A media-driven agenda.
I was confident it wasn't me.
I was sure it was you.
Is perfect.
What do you mean your mic technique is perfect? You're coughing, you yawn mid-sentence, Barry. I mean,
that's speaking. I'm talking about mic technique.
Okay.
I like the way as he says that. In terms of mic technique, you put your arm out and your hand out like you're some sort of performer.
Laurence Olivier.
Well, I was convinced it was you because of how unhealthy you are. But apparently, it's me. Yeah, producer Jonathan says you do drum on the mic stand.
No, that's Paolo.
Paolo hits it like this. I mean, when Bandini's doing that, you're like, for the wind and the rain, Paolo. Stop it. Anyway, I do apologise for breathing. Many people on social media would rather I didn't breathe at all. But if you don't mind, I'll carry on. Hang on. Before part one. Nick says, were the results over the weekend the most predictable results there could have been? And will this lead to the most predictable Premier League race since the last one? Mark.
Quite possibly, yeah. I mean, I don't think we didn't learn too much from the opening weekend in terms of the fact that Man City, like you say, are quite good and will probably, you know, win the league again. Liverpool look like their closest challengers, but it is only one weekend of results. But it was a disappointment. I was with an Arsenal fan last night, and he kind of felt like he did during the Arsene Wenger days. He wasn't as cheery as what he was a couple of days ago when he was full of hope for the new season.
It was nice watching. I watched the Arsenal game in the company of several Arsenal fans. It was nice just watching, you know, their breezy optimism before kickoff, and then 13 minutes it took for them to deflate. But
Martin writes, Archie, is it too early for hashtag Emery out?
I mean, Piers Morgan was already weighing in with that, which was about the least surprising thing of the weekend.
Oh,
as
was
well.
He? Oh, for God's sake. If you unfollow him, like genuinely, it's the easiest way to have a more relaxing life.
Okay.
Advice to anybody.
To be fair, I just searched it out. I don't know why I did, you know, but yeah, not all that surprising, I guess. But to be honest, I think this kind of opening day defeat for Arsenal is a little bit different than previous cock-ups at the start of a season where when they lost to West Ham, for example, and it was just this rage. I think losing to this Manchester City side it's a little bit more acceptable, even if they are Arsenal. And I think that it's easier to swallow, even though that next week they have Chelsea away, which isn't that promising.
I think Arsenal fans, you know, obviously it is going to take quite some time to de-Wenger the whole setup there. And Emery is going to need to, you know, more than one window to get in the personnel he wants for his system. But I think a lot of Arsenal fans did secretly think, yeah, we have a chance of beating City, a new beginning. They might play badly. But it all went according to script. And I think that must have been very disappointing for them, you know. I even thought, yeah, they might win this, but you know, before the game. And then it quickly became apparent they'll do well to avoid hiding. And it's nothing has really changed. And it would be foolish to expect that much to have changed in such a short space of time. But, you know, you go into the season full of delusional optimism, and it's always funny to see how long it takes for that to evaporate.
It's funny because I watched that game and I didn't think Arsenal were that bad, Mark.
No, I mean, Manchester City can make even good teams look terrible. I mean, Chelsea last week, Jorginho just got pressed out of the game completely. So it's maybe no surprise that Arsenal weren't as fluent as maybe Emre would have hoped for. I just felt, though, that defensively, the centre-backs looked no better than sort of last year's centre-back. Socrates had a difficult debut, as you would expect, I suppose, against you know, somebody as good as Aguero and all the attacking players they've got. And you know, it's clear that passing it back to Petr Cech has got some way to go, I think, before it's completely, you know, the way to be. I mean, Cech came out afterwards and said, like, he played that style before and it wasn't a problem. But I don't remember him playing like that under Jose Mourinho, for instance, at Chelsea. He kind of looked like an old man trying to recapture his youth. Maybe he should have been out in the nightclubs with Paolo. Maybe that's his next step.
Do we all wish that side foot had gone in from Petr Cech, the one that he rolled it wide?
There was a similar incident in the Bundesliga last season where a guy very nearly did that as well. And to bring it round to a kind of Bundesliga angle, I was surprised Bernd Leno didn't start. I've not been watching enough of Arsenal pre-season, but I think that Leno is a better goalkeeper than Petr Cech, and certainly more mobile and better with his feet and looking more comfortable in that regard. I think that's a little bit strange. I'll be interested to see what happens next week. I mean, the way that Emery was talking after the game, it didn't suggest that he was totally unhappy with Petr Cech. And it's also, I guess, a difficult situation given how senior a figure that he is in the dressing room. I don't think he's the sort who's going to go and kick up a fuss by any means. But I was surprised by Leno not starting, for sure.
Do you think Leno would have saved Sterling's first goal? It's hard to tell because he kicked it quite hard, but it did go sort of in the middle of the goal.
I think with that, it's down to quite a few factors because the box is so packed with so many players. It's kind of gone through a forest of them. But the biggest mistake is from Guendouzi kind of almost naively coming across to Sterling. And then by the time he's come across to him, Sterling's just already nipped past him, which gives Cech very little reaction time. But you look at where it's come in the goal, kind of you'd expect. It seems to, like, I mean, slow-mo, I think, always is unfair to every player on the pitch when they've made a mistake. But it's just the way that Cech seems to pull away from it, almost pull away from even going for the save, which looks a bit bizarre. And it feels a little bit harsh maybe to criticise Cech because of how many good saves he made yesterday. But I guess similarly with Guendouzi, like, lots of, I don't know if that's actually how you pronounce his name. But a lot of promise, but in the key moments, kind of game-costing errors.
It is worth mentioning, like, that's his first ever top flight game in any country. He's so, you know, but I was, there was definite promise there, but yeah, I think he deserves a bit to be cut a little slack.
Do we learn anything from Man City here, Mark, apart from they can win games reasonably comfortably without De Bruyne or without Sané?
Well, I thought it was quite interesting that Sane didn't start, given that he hadn't gone to the World Cup. He was only given 45 minutes in the Community Shield. I didn't know if he'd been sort of put on the naughty step by Pep for any reason, because it didn't make much sense, because Sterling had only just come back from holiday. I think from in terms of the new player, Mahrez, I mean, he had something different to City. I'm not sure I enjoy that difference, though. I liked it when they play with real pace with Sterling and Sane. Mahrez, for all of his abilities, slows their attacks down slightly. And I also felt that they maybe just lacked a bit of rhythm around the penalty area, because there were a number of times where they maybe could have got on a shot away, or, you know, they had half chances they didn't actually take into bigger chances. And I just wonder whether there's this kind of attitude with City that they finished 19 points clear of the rest, and they need to switch on the fact that, you know, it's a new season and they haven't got that advantage anymore. And I think that can sometimes happen to champions, but it was still easy enough.
Because there was a slight moment at the start of the second half where it looked like, I think when Mahrez was coming off, wasn't he? And he was taking so long. And you think, are City winding the clock down, running the clock down from 55 minutes? Because Arsenal had a little bit of pressure there, hadn't they?
I think they sort of coasted through the last 20, certainly. They were very much... It looked like City were just in a training exercise for the last 20 minutes. And I think that's possibly what disappointed me most about the Arsenal performance, that City didn't really have to go through the gears much to beat them. And when Arsenal were putting them under pressure, it was almost as if City had just gone, oh, we've won this, let's take it handy for the rest of the game. And that would be a worry, I suppose, for Pep Guardiola. You know, he doesn't have a great deal to worry about, but that would be a source of concern. But competition for places in that team is going to be so fierce, I think players have to keep on it, or they will lose their spot in the starting line.
It's like the pod.
Yeah.
I was going to say one word about Benjamin Mendy.
Yeah.
Because we've barely seen anything of him apart from on Twitter, really, or being kind of around the squad, being something of a, I don't know, class clown's probably a bit harsh. But I think that it was good to see him kind of have such a good game and really show the kind of player that he was at Monaco beforehand. I think that's going to be a really big difference for City this season, so long as he's able to kind of stay fit as well. But I think Arsenal didn't necessarily, as you say, Arsenal didn't necessarily play all that badly. I think that actually City didn't have all that many opportunities, as much as they look promising going forward. But ominous signs at this stage of the season that they can kind of win in second or third gear by the looks of
it. It's just one of those games where I came off going, I think Arsenal were quite good there, and then I read visceral takedowns in the newspapers. It's a bit like when I go to the cinema and watch a terrible film and I think that was great, and then the Guardian say it's bad and I have to go, oh damn, it's bad.
Well, you know, go with what the little Max inside you says. He's probably right. Just because the paper says they were rubbish, you know, if you thought their performance was good. I'm somewhere in between. I didn't think they were terrible, but I certainly didn't think they were good. And the thing is, you know, they haven't been lucky, or you could say they haven't been lucky, or the fixture generator hasn't been kind to them because they got City and then Chelsea away in their second game. But I think it's better to get fairly soundly beaten by City on the opening day under the new regime than maybe get beaten by Bournemouth, you know, which could also have happened. They're, you know, Maitland Niles, he looked hopelessly out of his depth. He wasn't getting much help from his teammates, I think, but for the time he was on the pitch, he was getting overrun because those overlapping fullbacks with City or wingbacks with City are just very difficult to deal with. And for a fairly inexperienced chap who was thrown in, he didn't cope very well.
I just noticed I breathed. I'd like to apologise.
I was wondering why you started laughing midway through my Maitland-Niles point.
Hey, does anybody want to pile in on Mesut Ozil? He got some stick again.
I thought he played well. We saw him work hard. We saw him track back.
I think when he gives away possession, it's because he's trying to hurt the opposition, isn't it? So when the stats come out about, you know, the amount of times he turned the ball over, that's because he's not trying to do two-yard passes to, you know, sideways to a teammate. He's trying to break the lines, or, you know, to put Aubameyang in. So I think by definition, most of those sort of playmakers that do that will give the ball away. I didn't think he was brilliant, but he wasn't bad either.
No, I agree with that analysis, and I think it's been a very difficult summer for him as well, given the hype that's been going on. I mean, hype's probably the wrong word to describe it. It's been a chaotic environment in Germany. That the story's been huge, front of every newspaper when it broke about him retiring from the international team. And I would expect him to go on and have a strong season now, but I wouldn't underestimate maybe the kind of effects of that would have had. I think playing for Arsenal will certainly be a release for him, but it's been incredible to see the kind of the fallout from that as well. But yeah, I agree with Mark's assessment. I didn't think he was all that bad, but he just has this, I think that languid quality will always open him up to being that little bit more of a scapegoat.
Liverpool 4, West Ham 0. And the highlight of the season, it will not be bettered. In one move, Mark Noble and Jack Wilshere both getting a ball right in the undercrackers. I don't know if anyone else, even, you know, obviously Sky, they like to take it all very seriously. But even Andy, I think it was Andy Hinchcliffe was on CoComs. Yeah. He just burst out laughing because he was like, Noble's like, oh, it's Wilshere. Oh, it's both. You're like, God, that is, I don't know if that's a portent for West Ham's season. Mark, were Liverpool good or were West Ham bad? A lot was being made of West Ham playing a very high line, which seemed slightly naive.
I don't know. It wasn't great from Pellegrini. And I felt for Balbuena, the new centre-back that come in from Brazilian football, didn't look the quickest anyway. And then he's asked to push up against Firmino, Salah and Mane. I mean, that's not... welcome to the Premier League.
It's hard to go... To get to go Gaffer, I'm really slow, by the way. You don't want him to find out, do you?
I mean, but I felt the real problem for West Ham, apart from playing against a team that was just much better than them, was the lack of dynamism in midfield. Jack Wilshere, Noble and Declan Rice, who only lasted until half-time, they just didn't get anywhere near the Liverpool midfield. From Liverpool's point of view, though, I mean, this was, you know, they beat West Ham last season, but these were the kind of games that people have said that they need to improve in at home. They drew too many matches at Anfield against this kind of middle tier opposition. I mean, the result was never in any doubt. Salah was as good as he was last season. And, you know, Liverpool actually, you know, everyone says about their poor defence. That's now 6 home clean sheets in a row in the Premier League.
This season?
Yeah, this season. Wow. And West Ham were the last team to score at Anfield in the Premier League. So, you know, Van Dijk has definitely improved them there. And I thought James Milner was absolutely outstanding. The best I've seen him for years. And Klopp has this way of kind of getting club men that you think of Kehl or Schmelz or somebody like that in his Dortmund teams that you wouldn't necessarily put in the best 11, and yet he kind of does, and that they always seem to do a job for him.
And arguably Milner's may drop out of that when Fabinho's fit and Henderson is fit as well.
Yeah, I mean, and Keita just looked like he'd been playing for Liverpool for absolutely ages.
Naby Keita's quite good at football.
Yeah.
He has been for the last two seasons in Leipzig, less so last season. But just the way that he's able to slalom past defenders, but also he has that ability to play the pass at the right time, as you saw for the first goal when he was slipping in Andy Robertson before he crossed into Salah. Just that, I think, uncertainty that he gives defenders where they don't know whether he's going to play the pass or they don't know whether he's going to try and dribble past them. And the thing is, he has that ability to dribble past you just so quickly. I think the point you raised there about Dortmund's Klopp, or Klopp's Dortmund, anyway. I think that the difference is he's reached a Champions League final with them once again, but this time he's actually been backed with the funds and has been able to keep key players after that. A year after reaching the Champions League final, Lewandowski left, for example, Mario Götze left in the summer of that Champions League. This time he's been able to strengthen. I'm really intrigued to see what happens with Liverpool this season, because I also think that they do have to pick themselves up off the ground a little bit emotionally with what they reached in terms of everything in that final, because it was kind of the air sucked out of their season in the end, particularly with what happened with Loris Karius. But just the way that they've strengthened and that sort of performance, I don't think West Ham will be up to much this season. I think that these signings that they've made are very shiny plasters over infrastructural problems at the club, and I think you see that in terms of the way that their defence is structured. I've seen a lot of Ryan Fredericks at Fulham, for example, but Ryan Fredericks is a player that you need to have in an attacking side. He is not the sort of player who's good when he's being pinned back. He's exceptionally quick, but you saw that he was caught out a couple of times yesterday to disastrous effect. So I worry a little bit for West Ham. I say I worry. I've got a sportsman's bet on with a mate that Fulham will finish above West Ham. So
you don't worry about them until you'd like them to finish bottom of the league. How much is the bet?
50 quid.
Ooh, big. On West Ham's high line, David Priest pointed out on Twitter a brilliant moment where Liverpool had a free kick and they had a two-man wall and their line was higher than the wall. I mean, that is really taking it to a ridiculous extreme. Are there any positives? I thought when... You're totally right, Mark, about the midfield. And there was a point when Wilshere came a bit deeper and you can just see what a great footballer he is. But you wonder if he needs lots of brilliant footballers around him.
For sure. I thought Felipe Anderson didn't do too bad, considering that West Ham had such little possession, and you know, going forward when they play at home to Bournemouth next week, you know, they'll have more of the ball, and I think you'll see him be able to be more creative. He didn't do a bad job defensively, which is not why he was bought, but actually I thought there were signs there that he could develop. But I just don't see the Arnautovic playing up front as a long-term solution. He did well in pre-season at the end of last year, but not really. I think if you spent all that money, I feel like you should have a proper centre forward playing for you, and Arnautovic off of him.
I would add that I thought Arnautovic didn't really look convinced of what he was doing. West Ham had chances in this game. I mean, it finishes 4-0, but at key moments at 1-0 and even at 0-0, there were kind of chances that West Ham had to get in behind here. I would call out Mikel Antonio as well for actually leaving Ryan Fredrick so open in the middle of the park as well. And they do have Issa Diop to come in, very expensive centre-half they've signed from France this summer as well. I think that he can make a difference, but there's already pressure now on West Ham ahead of that home game against Bournemouth. And Bournemouth are not a side which are easy to roll over at all. And then after that, they have to go to Arsenal. So it could already be kind of the makings of a sticky start, because look, I think those tensions that were there at West Ham with the pitch invasion against Burnley last season, I think they are still simmering under. So getting this kind of fixture at the start of the season was a nightmare, and I think the result has only confirmed it.
And the approach seemed weird. I mean, we spoke about the high line, but Manuel Pellegrini, he must have seen what Liverpool have done to other teams. You know, Roma last season. How can he have missed that? And it just...
Hang on, where was he last year?
He was in China, wasn't
he? He was in China.
Or maybe he didn't see it.
Maybe he just didn't.
But surely someone told him.
He sat down in the dugout and someone went, you know, they got to the Champions League final last year. Really?
Should mention that the third goal was offside, but
it was.
It doesn't. I mean, I've seen a few people from West Ham circles mention that, but did it really make a difference?
Changed the game.
No.
Wolves 2, Everton 2. We were right, Barry. Richarlison.
Waste of money.
What a lump.
This was in a weekend where there was no real standout game. You know, there was no real humdinger or a thriller. This was probably the best game of the weekend, certainly in my opinion. But Wolves were very impressive and probably should have won. You know, they were playing against 10 men for quite some time after Phil Jagielka got sent off, correctly, in my opinion. There seems to be some debate over whether or not he should have been dismissed.
I think the debate is, originally they said it was denying a goal-scoring opportunity, and then when they realised it wasn't, it was serious foul play. But whatever, he should have been sent off.
He could have broken his ankle.
But yeah, Wolves, an impressive start to their campaign in the Premier League. On their return, Ruben Neves, hugely impressive. And, you know, he was really comfortable in the Championship last season, and this doesn't look like it's going to be too much of a troublesome step up for him. And I thought Pickford probably should have done better for the free kick. You know, he was standing too close to the centre of the goal, clearly, and it was pointed out on Match of the Day that perhaps he didn't trust the wall to do their job. And so you could see once the goal went in, you know, he's always the first to shout and criticise or G up defenders or whatever, but he was looking a bit sheepish as he picked the ball out of the net. But yeah, Richarlison, absolutely excellent. I was getting pelters on Twitter from various Everton fans, and that's absolutely fair enough. I deserve that.
The second finish was great.
You know, one swallow doesn't make a summer. He was impressive at the start of his Watford career as well, and that didn't finish up so well. But yeah, brilliant start by him, and if he can keep that up, he'll be worth every penny of the
forty million
we were scoffing at Everton for paying.
Yeah, it's his first brace in English football and his first goal since November the 19th last year. Yeah. So,
well, yeah, as I say, brilliant start, but let's not get too excited just yet. But yeah, I fully acknowledge that Everton fans were well within their rights to gleefully laugh at me.
It's interesting, Mark, isn't it? Because I think Wolves, a lot of people who watched the Championship a bit were saying, well, Wolves, I reckon they'll finish seventh. And actually, if you're playing 10 men for that long, you should probably win that game. I mean, I don't know if that's too harsh.
No, I agree. I mean, I've got sort of Wolves finishing top 10 quite comfortably. The one area maybe where people had a concern was defensively, the centre-halves, because they weren't tested as much in the Championship. They play a very expansive game with the, you know, the wing backs push really high, free effectively up front, and it was all about really whether those centre halves that have come up from the Championship, whether they could cope. And I mean, the early signs weren't necessarily great in that department. Maybe Nuno just has a little bit of work to do, and mobility wise in midfield, as good as Neves was, I just wonder if he maybe needs, I mean, Moutinho obviously brings great experience, but not sure if they maybe need another body in there at times in midfield. Maybe that's something for Nuno to look at. But no, they'll be absolutely fine. I still think they'll finish top half. But yeah, slightly disappointing result given they played it against 10 men for so long.
Nuno has a great beard, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. And I said to you yesterday, I think he's like the Portuguese Keith Allen. But he
looks healthier than Keith.
Well, yeah. Well, Keith's lived a...
Keith lived a life. We don't know if Nuno has as well.
I suspect he may not have enjoyed the same, you know, or made similar lifestyle choices to Keith Allen. But he comports himself very well. He seems like a real good guy. He talks very well. And he's a welcome addition to the Premier League.
Welcome, Nuno. For those asking about Rui Patricio wearing the 11 in goal, apparently he declined the chance to wear the number one jersey as a mark of respect to Carl Hakimi, who he would have inherited it from. Hakimi's in complete remission from leukemia. He said that in June, but he has retired, so fair play to Rui Patricio.
Just a quick word on Carl Hakimi. I was fortunate enough to have a chance to speak to the Nigerian international manager, Gernot Rohr, the other day. And what's really nice to hear is that he's offered Carl Hakimi just a blank slate in terms of if he wants to have a go coaching with the Nigerian team in terms of working with that, then he's been given that chance just as soon as kind of all of the recuperation is over. And I think that everything you hear about Carl Hakimi just as a guy, just let alone as a footballer, is so encouraging to hear that he's been given that support around him. And I think that's a really, really nice gesture from Patricio, particularly, even if the squad number to a fan's eye may look a little bit strange, but I think it's a nice touch.
And it might mean he wants to play left wing at some point during the season. Manchester United got off to a winning start, Mark. How impressed were you with the swashbuckling? I feel bad. You know, I was watching the game thinking, this isn't that exciting, is it? But I don't want to just repeat what I'm saying. And maybe I wouldn't say it if, say, Spurs, who had a similar sort of performance, I might say it differently because the agenda is still for Poch and against Jose.
I mean, I do think that, you know, the way they played was a consequence of them scoring so early. So, you know, I think it was only natural, really, that they dropped back, you know, particularly with so many players just coming back from World Cup. I mean, I absolutely love sticking the boot into Jose Mourinho wherever possible, but I don't necessarily think that it's fair on this occasion. Leicester didn't do too bad either, and maybe on another day could have got a point. But I felt the real big talking point was after the game with Paul Pogba, when he was asked to sort of clarify his relationship with Jose Mourinho and said that he couldn't say what he wanted to because he'd be fined. I mean, that was a real power play from Pogba. I think just telling Jose exactly who's kind of, you know, more likely to sort of stay the distance at Old Trafford. And we saw in the lead up to the game all of the talk from the kind of board's point of view as to why they didn't make the signings that Jose Mourinho wanted. Then Pogba after the game comes out. And
for those who didn't know, what was their reasoning?
Well, they didn't think Harry Maguire was worth 70, 80 million. Toby Alderweireld was somebody that, you know, just didn't interest them at that kind of price at the age that he was. And they already had five centre-backs on the books, two of which he bought in, you know, one each in the last two summers. And Yerry Mina was available for around about £11 million prior to the World Cup. And then he's sort of a £30 million player after three or four matches in Russia. So that they felt like, you know, it was better to save the money. And Jose obviously doesn't agree, but I thought it was really interesting that Pogba had the opportunity to kind of say everything was okay and that the press reports going into the game were wrong, but he chose not to.
Do you think he was mulling over that statement in his very, very slow run-up to the penalty? He's sort of mentally writing it in his head, and that's why it took him so long.
It was a great penalty. Who did that last year?
Well, it was like a reverse Zaza.
That's it. Yeah, or 2 years ago, the Zaza.
But the Zaza one was, he was more Flatley-esque, you know, this. Because I was watching this game, and after he started his run-up and before he kicked the ball, I kind of looked at someone and went, he better score this. And they went, yeah, oh yeah. So we actually had time to have that chat in the time it took him to strike the ball. But yeah, it would have been awful if it hadn't gone in, because it but yeah, he hit it well.
Just think, Archie, of Pogba, I think it's difficult to see one of him or Mourinho will not be at the club in a year's time.
Who's your money on?
Mourinho
going.
Yeah,
what about Luke Shaw? Goal-scoring sensation.
I think there's a greater chance of him still being there. It was just nice to see him with a smile on his face, given everything that he's had to go through in terms of working back from that injury, everything that goes with that kind of rehabilitation. But
and forget how well he was playing then. It was a long time ago now, wasn't it?
Yeah. The problem is as well, when you move for that amount of money that he did from Southampton, the expectations on you to perform are just that little bit higher. And then to come back from that sort of injury and then be expected to find that level and break your way back into a Manchester United team, it's always going to be that little bit more difficult. I think this is going to give him a greater chance, at least until Ashley Young is back fit again. Because I think that the way that Ashley Young's played last season, for example, just with that sort of consistency, it's going to be difficult. So long as when Ashley Young comes in and plays a good game, then I think for Mourinho, he is still the number one. But I think an encouraging sign for Luke Shaw, even though, yeah, maybe thinking about it, I mean, the longer that Mourinho stays, the less chance that Luke Shaw will stay as well.
I mean, I echo what Archie said about Luke Shaw having a smile on his face, but you see his teammates were also incredibly pleased for him. Like, you know, they sort of, the celebration, it was almost patronising in a way, but I think the way Jose Mourinho has treated him is absolutely disgraceful. If it was any other kind of working environment, I think it would be a case for HR, you know, and you wonder, have any of the senior players gone to Jose or gone maybe above Jose's head and said, come on, this isn't fair. This kid is being bullied. But yeah, hats off to him. Nice to see
I hope
him.
There is an HR. I'd love that HR meeting.
Well, given what happened at Chelsea with
Dr. Eva Carneiro.
A ridiculous story from The Mirror yesterday that said Belgian manager Roberto Martinez is in the frame to replace Leicester City manager Claude Puel, who has two games to save his job.
Yeah, I mean, this is a hangover from last season, isn't it, really, where Puel, I think most people expected him to be gone from the King Power. He was given the start of this season. He was able to bring in his own backroom staff, and they actually played quite well. So it must have been slightly alarming to wake up to that story. They were linked with David Wagner as well before he signed that new contract. So I don't feel like Puel's there for the, you know, for the long term, and I think he, if there is to be somebody that, that goes first, I still think he, despite that performance, he probably is the favourite at the moment. But there were bright spots. Maddison, first half particularly, he kind of tired a little bit and then was taken off. I thought Ricardo right back or right midfield initially and then into right back did okay. Gazelle didn't though. I mean, we were speaking about the Luke Shaw goal. I mean, that was pathetic defending from him that allowed Luke Shaw to get in. But I thought Leicester did okay. And like I said earlier on, there were opportunities for them. And on another day, they could have got a point.
Strambouli says, I'd love to see James Maddison in the same team as Michael Bridges and N'Golo Kante. It's tenuous here.
I can see where this
is. What a goal. Bridges to Maddison Kante. Thanks very much, Strambouli. And that'll do for part one. Back in a tick. Welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. This is part two. We've got some live shows, Barry. The 5th of September, we're at the Royal Northern College of Music in Manchester.
A recital?
Yes, I'll bring the clarinet. What are you going to bring?
I can play the piano a bit.
Okay, can you?
Yeah. So we'll played it for a very, very long time.
Can we get a Casio keyboard for Barry? Sounds like a great idea.
I think I did grade 3.
That's pretty shit.
Well, like I could play Mozart-y stuff, not just, you know, I graduated beyond chopsticks. That
okay, so live in Manchester, Sid Lowe and Lars Sivertsen with us all to watch Barry Glendening playing Mozart's 4th concerto in C minor. And on the 19th of September, we're at the Rockefeller in Oslo. Me, you, Lars and Wilson. So if you are in or around the Oslo area, come and watch us, please. Newcastle 1, Tottenham 2. Mark, what sort of start was this for Tottenham Hotspur?
Just need the new signings to gel, Max, really. I think that's what maybe they need to do. No, I mean, they were okay. I thought first half deserved their lead and then tired in the last half an hour and were hanging on. And Newcastle were unfortunate to come away with nothing. In the end, I was surprised so many of the World Cup players started for Pochettino, given that they'd only returned from their holiday on Monday. But it was an important victory because the kind of story, had they not won, would have really turned on the fact that they made no signings. I tend to agree with Pochettino that there was no point buying people just for the sake of buying it. You look at the players they didn't have in their team at St James's Park: Trippier, Alderweireld, Danny Rose, Wanyama, Lamella, Son, Winks, Dembele, Llorente. I mean, how many more players do you actually need? It doesn't make that much sense to me to go and buy somebody just for the sake of buying them. I mean, they did that a couple of years ago with Sissoko. I think that you'd be better off spending that money on upgrading Eriksen or Dele Alli's contract or both of them. So I didn't understand why they took so much flack for not signing anybody. You had people saying, Chelsea shouldn't be buying Kovacic or loaning Kovacic because that blocks the path of Loftus-Cheek. And then they're making the same argument for Tottenham signing somebody like Kovacic and blocking the path of Harry Winks. So I think Pochettino is correct not to risk everything or waste money. And I still think they'll finish in the top four.
Do we know what the situation is with those players that Pochettino didn't seem too happy with last year, like Danny Rose and Toby Alderweireld?
Yeah, I mean, it's a long way back for anybody that falls out with Pochettino. I don't expect Alderweireld to be in the first team. I think that was his first choice centre-back pairing. But if you've got him on the bench, then you know there will be times when you need him. I mean, that Danny Rose relationship feels like it's broken. But Ben Davies is legitimately Tottenham's number one left-back, I feel now. So he'll be pleased that, you know, Aurier put in a great cross for the Dele Alli goal because he still makes so many stupid mistakes defensively. But overall, it was a very good result, if not performance, for Tottenham.
Had been talked that Danny Rose could still go to Schalke on a loan deal. And I do believe, is it Kyle Walker-Peters that they have?
He can play left back. He played left back for England under 20s.
Sure. So I think that's probably the most positive aspect, I think, from a neutral perspective about Tottenham's policy of not buying anyone this summer, is that Pochettino has shown in the past that he's willing to bring through these young academy players, particularly, I think, in terms of Harry Winks. You look at what England lacked at the World Cup. I think that Winks is one of those players that could really be an important player for England in future years, along with Loftus-Cheek. But for Spurs, I thought they were fortunate to get away with a win here. Important, I think, in that regard. I think you could tell that they weren't all that fresh still from the World Cup. I think Newcastle were, a little bit hard done by, almost lacking that little bit of composure, but that's not what comes out of the game. The narrative builds against Mike Ashley, rightly so, to be fair, given the way that he continues to conduct his business. That this takeover of House of Fraser is announced on...
Neil says, if you were Mike Ashley, would you rather have 2.25 Richarlisons or one whole House of Fraser?
is that an actual question?
Mm.
The Richarlisons, please.
Okay. I mean, what does House of Fraser do? Is that just sort of trendy polo shirts?
I have no idea. I've never been in a House of Fraser.
Yeah, perfumes, cushions, candles, that sort of thing.
I mean, have a haberdashery.
I don't know.
Maybe a haberdashery. Is a haberdashery?
That's another good question. I mean, we worked out what a fromagerie was by the end of last pod. Hopefully, producer Jonathan can help us out.
And will there be one in Spurs' new stadium?
Almost certainly. I mean, for personal use, I have more need for cushions in my house than Richarlisons, I'll be honest. Why?
Yeah.
Well, because I think I've got quite a nice sofa. The comfort is augmented by extra cushions. I believe if Richarlison was there...
2.25 of them.
2.25 of them. I think the future Mrs. Rushton would wonder what he was doing there. I imagine he's got sort of knobbly... Even if he's got very smooth knees.
What's the quarter of him that you're taking?
Well, I'm not taking it. I'm taking House of Fraser. Even though I've never been in one.
Because Richarlison doesn't even speak English, so you couldn't even have, like... a chat with him if you're bored or whatever. You just sit and play video games.
Haberdashery, a shop or department within a larger store that sells small items used in sewing, such as buttons, zips and thread.
Yeah, okay. I don't think there's one of those. In not the House of Fraser I go to.
Okay. Back to the game, if we must. Dele Alli is the way he ghosted in for that header, and he's started to do that a lot. And I know comparisons are made with Frank Lampard a lot, and he's a slightly different player, slightly more languid, but I still think he's quite underrated, Barry.
I think on his day there are a few better, but he's a bit patchy for me, Clive. But he had a brilliant game on...
You can get some good patches, actually, at the haberdashery of House of Fraser.
I thought he played really well on Saturday. You know, it was a wonderful performance. I mean, the goal, the header was, I think I'd have scored that header, but it was a wonderful cross from Serge Aurier, first time cross. Yedlin completely lost Alli, and it would have been a rum do if he'd missed that. I think it was really put on a plate for him, but just his movement and general contributions, I thought Newcastle just couldn't cope with him at all, and he was outstanding. And again, I presume he only came back to full training quite recently after his World Cup endeavours. And I don't think he's a bad player, but not by any means. But yeah, he's just not consistent enough for me yet.
That goal saw Matt Ritchie originally not track the run, but that's not why I mentioned Matt Ritchie. It's because people have been making a very good comparison on Twitter that he looks like Gordon Ramsay. Have you seen this?
I mean, I haven't seen it, but I can see it.
Somebody's managed to dub exceedingly well Matt Ritchie looking very grumpy after coming off, and Gordon Ramsay swearing, saying kitchen nightmares.
When he went off, it was a four-letter tirade, wasn't it? Presumably aimed at Rafa Benitez. He didn't feel like he should have been sent off. I was surprised he was substituted, because you know he was a big threat down that side, as was Kennedy down the left foot.
And he had
Newcastle.
A great chance. I mean, it's a lovely pass from Joselu.
Yeah, it was just a bad touch, wasn't it? It was a bad touch. But, I think Newcastle, yes, there's doom and gloom around for obvious reasons, but on the pitch, I still don't think that they'll be in trouble this season. I mean, as long as Rafa stays... they'll be absolutely fine.
Bournemouth 2, Cardiff City 0. We all said Cardiff would struggle, Barry. I know it's only one game, but they're going to struggle, aren't they, Barry?
It looks like it, yeah. I mean, they will be hard to beat at home, I suspect, and will take points off mid-ranking teams, beat a few teams probably, but it looks like a championship squad in the Premier League. Well, it is a championship squad in the Premier League, more or less, and it's hard to see where goals are going to come from. But we said the same thing about Newcastle last season, championship squad in the Premier League, and they ended up finishing 10th. So. Hmm.
Although I still think that was disingenuous about Newcastle.
Do you?
Yeah, I think Lascelles... Okay, he sort of proved himself, possibly, but Shelvey is not a Premier League footballer. Yeah. I think Diarmé is a Premier League footballer. I look at that Cardiff City squad, and by virtue of the fact that I'm not that familiar with that many of them, suggests that they are a championship squad.
We would have said the same about Huddersfield last season, but I think the difference is in the innovation in the manager. I think that Neil Warnock is an excellent championship coach, but I wonder about whether he can hack it in the Premier League in terms of just being able to have that sort of different idea that you can't quite. I think you do need to compromise on your style a little bit in the Premier League if you're playing expansive football, but that's not what Cardiff do. And I just wonder whether they have the technical quality within that squad. So I think I can't see Neil Warnock being able to manoeuvre them in the right way. But I think I can't see them necessarily doing a derby, but yeah, I still would have them going down.
The team selection was, I mean, you had Sol Bamba playing in midfield, which, I mean, that's not, you're not going to win and create too many chances in the Premier League with Sol Bamba playing in midfield, and, you know, Bobby Reid was up front on his own. So, and Bournemouth kept the fewest clean sheets, or joint fewest clean sheets in the Premier League last season, and Cardiff had one chance against them, and that was the Morrison one from a set piece. So, you know, if you're struggling to create opportunities against a team as poor defensively as Bournemouth, then you know you're in big trouble.
Mark Langdon's anti-Sol Bamba agenda coming out again. James writes, second season in a row Barry has tipped Bournemouth to go down. There's a press-driven vendetta, without a doubt. You change that tune,
hate
Barry?
Bournemouth.
Yes, you do, don't you? Fulham 0, Crystal Palace 2. You were there, Archie.
I was.
Was Rindo there?
He was.
Ah, excellent.
Wearing
news.
His shirt.
Wearing his...
With Rindo 60 on the back.
Okay, did you have a nice time?
Yeah, I didn't. I don't think I told you that on playoff final day, there was a little bit of an awkward moment when I because there was a whole thing at Fulham with the white wall at Wembley. But my dad took that a little too literally because he came dressed like, it looked like nearly in full kit. Like he had the Fulham shirt on and then white shorts and white socks.
Nice.
So
how old is Rindo?
He is 60.
60, excellent.
Which thankfully, I mean, because he was going elsewhere after, he brought some trousers. So a change was made. But that wasn't the case on Saturday, to get back to that. I think that it was a... Fulham got Hodgson'd. It was kind of a bit like watching old-style Fulham of the 2010 era when they reached the Europa League final against New Style, except that Crystal Palace are a lot better equipped in terms of having quicker players and, I would say, more technically skillful as well. Fulham dominated for the first half an hour or so and without necessarily creating all that much. Kind of, I think Wayne Hennessy had a good game but not a great game. There's been a lot made of his performance. Lots of encouraging signs for Fulham in terms of Jean-Michel Seri or Jean-Michel Seri.
Michael.
Mm. Yes.
We just want to say Jean-Michel.
Oh, you just see those two dots over the E's and it just kind of, I think, makes you want to put a continental flavour on it. He was excellent. I don't know if you've ever heard of a man called Mark Fotheringham. But
big fan.
I'm sure. But having to watch him in a Fulham shirt 4 years ago was one of the most painful experiences. So being able to see somebody of Jean-Michel Seri's ability was incredible. But I think the man of the match was Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who the Crystal Palace fans had an excellent chant for as well. It was their wingers don't like him. Wan-Bissaka, Wan-Bissaka, to the tune of Rock the Casbah, which was excellent.
I expected more from Fulham, I have to say. I know they've got a lot of new players in and it'll take time to get a tune out of them. But I was kind of disappointed. I fully expected them to win and win comfortably. And I just thought they were a bit ponderous. For all I've heard loads about Ryan Sessegnon, mm-hmm. haven't seen a great deal of him. But the guy whose hairstyle I'm going to emulate for Thursday's pod had him in his pocket the whole game. I think he thoroughly outperformed him. So, you know, I'm not saying Fulham are terrible, but yeah, I expected a lot more.
I would say you saw a very typical performance there from Fulham in terms of no real difference, I would say, to what they were doing in the Championship. It's just that the quality of the opposition kind of went up a notch. If you'd picked one team I really wouldn't have wanted to face on the opening day, I would have said Crystal Palace, just outside of the top six, because they are so incredibly well-drilled by Roy Hodgson. Mm-hmm. It is that organisation. It's horrible to play against when you are that kind of expansive side that Fulham are. And it's just, I think if you picked any other side in the bottom half, it would have maybe been that 3 points. But just at this stage of the season, the way that Roy Hodgson sets his sides up, I think just also having a game against the top six would have been a little bit more of a kind of a throwaway kind of, there's nothing to lose from it. So it does look that little bit more disappointing.
A lot was made of last season, and I was making a lot, that Crystal Palace were a one-man team with Wilfried Zaha. Anything to say that they're more than that?
Yeah, that they are. They are more than a one-man team. That they have to be, simply to play the way they do, just with that sort of discipline. Wilfried Zaha is an incredible outlet for them to have going forward, but they still have ways to hurt you. I think it was a little bit frustrating as an opposition fan to see the way that they scored their first goal, because Jeffrey Schlupp puts it in the one area where it's almost unsavable. I don't think you can really have any qualms about that. But in midfield, it's very well balanced, I would say, in terms of with MacArthur and Milivojevic. I think that there's no chance of Crystal Palace struggling this season at all, just because they will be that solid. I think that actually they're a good shout for the top 10. And also their fans were excellent, I have to say, as well. They managed to take the piss out of Fulham quite nicely, even if that hurts to say, when they were saying, "We clap with our hands." Because Fulham, of course, have the clappers. One thing to add briefly, it is a point made very often in the Premier League, but I think it's still one to make, that I think it is outrageous to have a home ticket price of £45 for Fulham against Crystal Palace. That is, I think, what is it now? Away fans' ticket prices are capped at £30. But that sort of thing is just, I fear a little bit if Fulham continue to go down that road, because you're going down to a place where you're encouraging an environment of fans who are there for the good times. And Fulham cannot afford that as a club. I mean, I saw that in terms of the way that attendances dropped straight after Fulham went down to the Championship as well. But I mean, that they pumped up season ticket prices as well by £250 in terms of the early bird. So people got it from early bird to people who then bought after the playoff final, which is just creating a divide within the fans. And I really am a little bit worried in that regard. But, and I mean, I'm sure you could say to me, Barry, okay, everyone else does it in the Premier League, but I'm sure you'd agree that it doesn't make right. It's just,
agree.
It's a really worrying trend. I mean, and I'm not saying this as well coming from, I spend most of my time in Germany, and the Bundesliga is not as much the land of milk and honey as it may present itself. Particularly,
we're convinced fans own everything. They choose transfers, and it's one Deutschmark to get in.
No, if you're looking for a one-off ticket to the Bundesliga, it's just as expensive to as you were going to Premier League. If you have been a fan who's been there for 20 years or so, then yes, you can get access to those cheap tickets. But I think that obviously there's a massive advantage in terms of fans of Bundesliga, that they own the clubs for the most part, and there is just not that same influence in the Premier League. But I'm worried in terms of, not just with Fulham, but other fans just being shafted completely, because you see it in terms of the way it impacts on the atmosphere. I think that's why Crystal Palace have one of the best atmospheres, that you were mentioning on Thursday's pod about the Homesdale Ultras potentially not going. That, I think, is a worrying sign for Crystal Palace, because I think that is the best atmosphere in the Premier League that I've seen.
But I couldn't agree more with Archie there. But the thing is, if you raise the subject of clubs rinsing their fans, and a lot of Premier League clubs do, and raise the subject of tickets being overpriced, you will actually see fans of one team. They're so one-eyed and blinkered, some of them. They will defend their own club's overpriced tickets by pointing to some other club's even more overpriced tickets. And I think as long as that is happening, clubs will be able to get away with doing whatever they like. My mind boggles when I see this, you know, our overpriced tickets aren't as overpriced as Chelsea's overpriced tickets. You go, yeah, but your tickets are still, you're being rinsed. It just beggars belief.
There needs to be more solidarity between fans on that, because it's ridiculous. Like, why wouldn't you help each other out? That is an area I would say that they are good at in Germany, but it just becomes all the harder to stomach when, I mean, particularly with Fulham, you spent over £100 million in the transfer market and you still need to kind of drive up your income or whatever in terms of... I just can't understand that. And yeah, I agree with Barry completely. Why would you take the mick out of another? Like, you're in this together.
It should all be free for everyone.
Not free, but you get the point.
Huddersfield 0, Chelsea 3, Mark. This was a nice way for Maurizio Sarri to... choose cigarette butts and win, wasn't it?
It was. Tough 10 minutes right at the start. Huddersfield did put them under pressure, but once they got the opening goal through N'Golo Kante, it became quite comfortable for Chelsea, and then they had the luxury of bringing on Hazard late on just to sort of add a bit of sparkle to it. And I think that we'll see, as the season develops, sort of Hazard become even more important to Chelsea than he has been in previous campaigns. Finally, there's a manager there that will play attacking football. It's not all perfect yet, but I don't think anybody can expect it to be at Chelsea this early on into the campaign. I thought it was interesting that Kante got that goal, because at Napoli, Alan was a defensive midfielder that Sarri turned into somebody that went box to box. So presumably Kante is going to get into those positions sort of more often. Still not overly convinced by the centre-halves, David Luiz in a back sort of two in terms of the centre-backs, and Rudiger. I still feel that teams will... can get joy there, but better teams than Huddersfield, who are, you know, already really just looking to survive, and I fear for them this season, not just because of that result, but they've got Man City away next, and last season they got off to such a good start and then were able to just hang on towards the end. If they're playing catch up from sort of September onwards, don't see them being able to maybe do like what Crystal Palace did last season, got behind but then, you know, caught up with everybody else. So their season won't be defined by results against Chelsea, but I already had them down as really struggling this season.
I don't think Huddersfield will be relegated this season.
Oh, really? Because I think that's the first time I've heard that from an expert.
I wouldn't call me an expert, though. But yeah, I don't think Huddersfield will be relegated this season. I think that there is something to be said for that togetherness that they have there. And the first thing I really look for in terms of Premier League relegation is... who are the clubs with the worst infrastructure and the worst in terms of how they're being run? And I wouldn't say, whilst David Wagner is certainly the pillar there at the centre of Huddersfield, if he wasn't there, then I would worry. But there is no chance of David Wagner leaving Huddersfield this season. He is on a freebie there. I think that it's a difficult start for sure, but they have made improvements there. This lad Kagolo, I think they've signed at centre-back. They're expecting... for him to move on to a Champions League club at some point in the future as well. I think that they won't really change, they won't compromise on their style, but I just think there will be three other sides who are worse than Huddersfield this season, particularly in terms of infrastructure and being run poorly off the pitch.
I wouldn't agree. I do think they'll go down, but David Wagner said after that game he saw enough in that defeat at the hands of Chelsea to tell him that Huddersfield was comfortably stay up, and I wouldn't agree with them at all, but Huddersfield fans are probably, and rightfully, they can point to, I think is it Alex Pritchard should have had a penalty before Chelsea scored. He got a knee in the back from David Luiz climbing all over him in the penalty area. Steve Mounier hit the post with a header that could have gone in. So yeah, you could argue that they weren't as bad as the 3-0 scoreline suggests, but I wasn't particularly impressed with them either.
When you have run out of cigarettes, Barry, do you get the same fix from chewing on a fag butt?
I have never chewed on a fag butt in my life.
Could you possibly do that before Thursday?
No, I imagine it would be absolutely disgusting.
It must be pretty similar.
I've heard a story, possibly apocryphal, of a child who got addicted to nicotine by chewing on their parents' discarded fag butt.
That's sweet.
I wonder if perhaps someone could introduce him to Nicorette gum or give him a nicotine patch, which would easily get him through 2 hours, I'd say. I've never heard of anyone chewing cigarette butts before, apart from this child I mentioned.
Well, Scandinavians get a load of tobacco and just shove it in.
Completely different.
Is that completely different?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's really weird.
It's disgusting. I mean, the thing is, these cigarette butts, I'm guessing, they have to have come from cigarettes that have already been smoked.
Do you think he's got someone to smoke them for him?
If you just broke the filter off a normal cigarette, it's basically you're just chewing cotton wool. There's no nicotine in it aware of.
Do you think he smokes them and then like leaves them on the side to take to games?
Yeah, that seems to be what he's doing. But
it's sort of very good for...
I don't know, what else is Danny Drinkwater going to do for the rest of the season? So maybe that could be his role from now until January.
That's what to do with all the youth team, the Chelsea youth team.
I saw someone point out that, you know, we expect from managers this kind of sharp suit and tie look, whatever. But I enjoy the fact that Maurizio Sarri looks like he's just rolled out of bed.
Adam says, sartorial rating of Premier League managers, Sarri wearing an XL when he's clearly just a large. Still rumours about Real Madrid's buying Hazard.
I know it was on the back of one of the papers on Sunday. I mean, I just don't see how, A, Real Madrid can afford him, but B, how can Chelsea sell him now? I don't see it.
Okay. Watford 2, Brighton 0. Roberto Pereira, what a volley, Baz.
Yeah, but Watford did that last season as well. I can't remember who scored the goal, but you know, kind of outswinging corner and boom from sort of around the edge of the box, and it's a great strike. It's a bloody hard skill to pull off, and for everything to go right. But again, that was a result I didn't foresee.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was a sort of classic Watford will win, Brighton. I mean, Chris Hughton afterwards was pretty damning, saying, look, it troubles me when any opposition has an easier day as Ben Foster had. We didn't deserve anything from today. And you sort of think, well, you've had all of pre-season, and that is a really sad way to begin your campaign. Six shots, none on target.
Yeah, and hardly any of the new signings played, so maybe they're not up to speed yet. I mean, this was a classic score last nil. Brighton lost last season. Brighton lost seven matches, 2-0 away from home, and they just seem to be very negative on the road. They're much better at the Amex, where they put teams under pressure. He needs to get some of them new signings, you know, up to speed quickly, because to barely lay a glove on a pretty average Watford team is a disappointing start. As far as Watford concerned, I had them down as struggling this season. Still think that maybe they will, but it was interesting to see Deeney and Andre Gray start together, because last season they were quite a negative team. Javi Garcia just kind of grinded his way to safety. Wonder if they'll be a little bit more expansive this year.
G-Wib says, can you think of any other clubs that switch between stripes and plain designs like Watford? It's a very Cambridge shirt of 2003-04. I mean, for me, Watford shouldn't be in stripes. It's not on. And for that reason, I hope they go down.
Fair enough.
Southampton 0, Burnley 0. So they drew 0-0 Burnley on Thursday against Istanbul Başakşehir. Another goalless draw. Tom says, how weird is it that Southampton and Burnley have six England goalkeepers? Call-ups not all have played across their squads. Were they all playing? And that's why it was nil-nil. I mean, I don't know if anyone has anything interesting to say about this fixture.
I think Southampton could be in trouble this season. And I don't necessarily think that's really a surprise given the way that they ended last season. But also, I don't really trust Mark Hughes. What Barry was saying the other day about him moaning about referees, I couldn't get behind more. I think that you look at that starting lineup and you're wondering where's any kind of fresh impetus coming from.
Danny Ings is a good signing, isn't it?
In the right system and in the right club, yes. I think within Burnley, I think in a Sean Dyche side, I could see it. But under Mark Hughes, I'm not quite sure. And they really, really struggled yesterday until they switched formation. And that was enforced by an injury as well. Burnley should have won this in the first half. So I fear for Southampton. I don't think it's quite as smooth behind the scenes as it once was. I think Burnley, it depends when they go out of the Europa League a little bit, but I can't really see Burnley struggling that much this season.
Do you not trust Mark Hughes in a purely footballing context? Or
you know what?
You wouldn't trust him, for example, to sort of look after your... to house sit or, you know...
At Fulham, he actually did a better job than was given credit for. But then he left, and I mean, the Fulham fans still throw this back at him because he said that the club didn't show enough ambition. I'm sure that he would have gristled somewhat seeing the club spend 100 million this summer, being like, why couldn't I have had that owner? But I think that what's happened, if you listen to QPR fans, if you listen to Stoke fans in terms of what's happened at those two clubs and the decline shown there and just the lack of being able to thread a team together, and just it's never his fault.
When the excuses whiteboard was mentioned on, I think it was on Thursday's pod.
Oh, can we add to it?
Yes, well, oh, it was that the reason maybe that Burnley were sharper is because they've been playing matches in the Europa League. So he felt that that's why Southampton started the game slowly and were under pressure, because Burnley were more up to match speed. So that's the first excuse.
To be honest, I'd give him that one. Yeah. You know, that's...
I was going to say
there's a kernel of a point there.
Do you think? I mean, I think if you're at home, I mean, how many teams get dominated by Burnley at home? I mean, even if you're half fit, I mean, Burnley are not that sort of team that dominate anybody. You know, they sit back, and I just thought it was
another
lame excuse.
We'll add Mark Hughes to your Sol Bamba list of.
I like Sol Bamba.
Oh, you change the tune now.
No, I like Sol Bamba, but I just like him at centre half rather than in central midfield.
That'll do for the Premier League. We'll be back with the Football League and the rest of the football around the world in just a second. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly, the Football League. Bielsa's Leeds smashed Derby 4-1 at Pride Park, Barry. They're going to win every game.
They certainly look impressive, but you have to add the Bielsa caveat. You know, will they be able to maintain? Will he hang around? Will he fall out with everyone? Hopefully not. And will they be able to keep this up over the course of a season? Because, as we know, his teams have a habit, and it's understandable because of the amount of energy they're forced to exert in games, of running out of steam or gas towards the end of seasons. But absolutely, Leeds fans have every right to be very excited indeed at the moment. And they've bashed two of the teams who were expected to be fighting for promotion in their opening two games. So great stuff.
Particularly in a 46-game season as well, that prospect of burnout is that little bit higher. And when you get into the thick of the championship in terms of the Saturday-Tuesday rhythm, I'm going to watch with interest in terms of how they deal with that. But just the way they tore Derby apart with such ease as well. I mean, I'm not quite convinced about how Frank Lampard will do at Derby this season, but I think, yeah, very promising signs.
There was that bit where there was a moment where the camera sort of panned on Jody Morris hiding his hand talking to Frank Lampard. I'd just love to know what it was he was saying at that point, because it was probably something like, they don't do this at the Chelsea Academy when I'm managing the under-23s or whatever. You know, don't come up against Bielsa too often. I mean, what a great time for Leeds fans. It may not last, but just enjoy it while you can, because it's fab. It's just fantastic.
It's interesting for Frank Lampard, isn't it? Because your first job in management is so crucial, because if you have a bit of luck and a bit of success, that's how you're regarded. You know, he's gone in at Derby. If he does that well, then he's a good championship manager who could do it in the Premier League. If it doesn't work out for him, the next, and obviously it's far too early to even talk about that, but if it doesn't work out for him, then, you know, when do you next take a risk? And Mel Morris doesn't hang around as an owner.
He doesn't. And I mean, they've had this crazy transfer window where they just kept buying players that they didn't need. I mean, even Dwayne Holmes was the last one just before the deadline shut from Scunthorpe. They've already got loads of forwards, and it didn't make any sense to just keep buying them. I thought they were pretty poor against Reading when they got away with it big time in that opening game. So a lot of work to do. But when you're changing philosophy, it could take a couple of months.
You want to mention Swansea, Barry?
Yeah, well, they've won their opening two games. They beat Preston 1-0. But their fans are very, very angry and seem to have every right to be, because they've brought in Graham Potter, you know, there's a lot of talk about him. And they can't have brought him in having sold him we're going to sell all our best players in the window, many of them for ridiculous amounts of money, as in far less than we paid for them, and not buy any replacements, or if we do buy replacements, buy hopelessly inadequate replacements. And that's what's happened. There was speculation on transfer deadline day that Potter had actually resigned because of what had happened. But to all intents and purposes, it looks from the outside as if their American owners are asset stripping the club. And Swansea fans are understandably miffed by this. And they're understandably miffed by this. And, you know, we're talking about a club here that 5 years ago or even less was held up as a bastion of this is how to run a football club. And now it looks like an absolute mess.
But we were also, the appointment of Graham Potter actually made us all go, oh, Swansea have realised the mistakes they've made since they sacked Gary Monk.
Stuart James, the Guardian football writer, he brings his kids to see Swansea. I'm not sure if he's a Swansea fan, but his kids certainly are. He's a regular there. He knows what's going on at the club. Sadly, he's on holidays at the moment, so we couldn't get him on, but because he would be able to give a better take on what's going on there than I can. But I know Ellis is very upset and annoyed at what's going on. Ellis James, who's a big Swans fan. And Stuart was ranting and raving on Twitter on transfer deadline day. He's a very, very mild-mannered man.
He is placid.
He was effing, jeffing, ranting and raving. I was quite shocked, you know. But if they can reduce Stuart James and Ellis James to that kind of profanity, something has clearly gone badly wrong.
Rotherham Ipswich, a nice send-off for Barry Chuckle, Archie.
Yes, the two fans were at one point exchanging to me, to you, which was, yeah, really nice to see in terms of between the Rotherham and the Ipswich fans, that was. And Rotherham even won with a injury time winner to celebrate it. So, yeah, Paul Chuckle was sending his thanks after the game as well, which was, yeah, so a poignant occasion.
It was the 73rd or 4th minute, I think.
Yeah.
And Justin Morehouse was saying on the radio yesterday, it's only a shame that the Rotherham and Ipswich players didn't just pass the ball between each other during that minute, and then someone runs on with a ladder. Steve McLaren is off to a relatively humorous start in charge of QPR, unless you are a Queen's Park Rangers fan. They're being kept off the bottom of the league by virtue of being earlier in the alphabet than Reading. And only just earlier than Reading.
To be fair. The penalty that they had awarded against them on Saturday was never a penalty. And
what happened?
One of the worst decisions that I've ever seen.
Oh, great.
Ball came into the box. There was a tussle between two QPR defenders and David McGoldrick, who'd just come off the bench for Sheffield United. I mean, they all just kind of jumped up for it, and I think just similar physical contact that you'd expect when going up for a header. And then McGoldrick lands on his feet, and then the referee blows his whistle and points for a penalty. Like, a few Sheffield United players appealed for it, but it's just odd. I mean, Ian Holloway was spitting feathers in the Quest studio, because Quest are, of course, the company who are now showing the Football League highlights.
Are they?
Yeah.
Is that just after a repeat of the Crystal Maze?
Well, actually, funnily enough, I had a look, because, I mean, it's an interesting kind of choice of, channel, I guess, in terms of what they showed earlier during the day. I had a look on Saturday. At 3 p.m. they were showing Mega Shippers.
Okay.
At 4 p.m. Phantom Works. If you'd gone back a little bit earlier in the day, Salvage Hunters. And 12 p.m. my personal favourite, How It's Made. Find out how balloons, wallpaper, frozen chips and incandescent light bulbs are made.
It's a terrible dinner. And then, anyone, isn't it?
And then yeah, it says, where is it? 9 p.m. EFL on Quest.
That is curious. I'm not going to disparage it because
you'll be working on it in a few weeks if you're lucky. Yeah,
nothing wrong with it.
League One, Barnsley are top, and Archie proudly, before part three began, said he has Barnsley manager trivia. I mean, if we have time and money, I expect a jingle for this section.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's football trivia. It's not anything as spectacular as Kepa keeping goldfinches or anything.
Okay.
But 20 years ago, when Joachim Löw was struggling in the German second division and was taking Karlsruhe actually to a relegation, the game and the goal that got him sacked was scored by Daniel Stempel. That's it.
He's the Barnsley manager.
And he's the Barnsley manager.
Because I'm not sure everyone would know that.
I'll be honest, I was underwhelmed by that after the big build-up he gave it during the last...
I did actually say it's not going to be worth it. And maybe it wasn't worth it. It probably wasn't worth it.
Hey, Mark, you went to MK Dons Bury in League 2. The Racing Post must have a lot of reporters if you're... one of their finest, and they're sending you to that.
Yeah, well, I get to choose my own game of a Saturday. And it was Paul Tisdale's first game at home in charge of MK Dons. Of course, he was 12 years at Exeter. Controversial move in some respects because he's kind of held up as this beacon of the Football League, been at Exeter for so long, gone to the club that, you know, a lot of fans dislike. He's gone there. I expect them to get promotion, but they've really had to fight their way to a 1-0 victory. It was 0-0 until just going into injury time. Usise, the substitute that had come on, the bloke in front of me said he's useless, should be playing in the National League. 20 minutes later, he pops up with the winning goal. A Mali international, no less, as well for MK Dons.
Oh, who's the last Mali international that I've heard of? Kanute? You play with Mali?
I'm struggling.
Yeah. By the way, breaking news. Producer Jonathan says that was fun trivia, Archie. Why are you deadpanning? So I take it all back. It was excellent trivia. Well done.
I mean, he books the guests, so that pleases me.
closer to the mic, please, Archie. That's what I've been asked to tell you as well. Macclesfield Town, 71 minutes. Their Twitter account, players stopped because a goose has entered the pitch. Anyone who's seen the footage of the goose actually runs a little bit like Aaron Lennon. That's what that's the thing I noticed most about it. And well done to Cambridge United, who smashed Notts County 3-2, never in doubt. A 94th-minute winner from Barry Corr. The last one to come up on Soccer Saturday. That is exciting when you think you've drawn 2-2, and then it comes up and you're the goal. It's very rare that happens. Hey, Fitbar, Barry, what a surprise.
Big surprise, Hearts beat Celtic. Kyle Lafferty popped up to score against Celtic, as he habitually does. He's a slightly enigmatic player, always does well for Northern Ireland. Very ropey at club level, but he was Hearts' top scorer last season. Had a good season with them, despite well-documented gambling issues, which they helped him get through. Lafferty is now being linked with a move back to Rangers, and apparently wants to go, but he's not agitating for a move, unlike Dedric Boyata, who, on the strength of a couple of half-decent performances at the World Cup for Belgium, has basically down tools, gone on strike, and wants to move away from Celtic. He was linked with a move to Fulham.
Surely he's only allowed to go to Southampton and then to Spurs or Liverpool. That's
I don't think Spurs or Liverpool would want him, to be honest. I don't think he's a particularly good centre-half, and I think most Celtic fans would be glad to see the back of him. But anyway, he's gone on strike, and all is, you know, there is trouble in paradise, because Brendan Rodgers has gone public complaining about lack of funds. His relationship with Celtic chief exec Peter Lawle is rumoured to be in a pretty fragile and precarious state, and they have this big Champions League qualifier coming up away at AEK Athens during the week. they only drew at home, and there's a very good chance they could go out of the Champions League and not qualify for the group stages. And if so, what would that mean for Rodgers, who seems possibly to be nearing the end of his reign there? And it's all good news, of course, for Steven Gerrard, whose Rangers side had another man sent off this weekend, but won 2-0 against St Mirren. So Hearts, top of the league, 2 wins from 2. And Dundee, Motherwell, yet to get off the mark, both on 0 points at the bottom. Celtic mid-table.
The Spanish Super Cup, Barcelona 2, Sevilla 1. Messi's 33rd career trophy, his first as captain of Barcelona since he took over from Iniesta. The winner, Mark, was a thunderbolt from Ousmane Dembélé, wasn't it?
It really was. And Barcelona looks threatened on the counter-attack by Sevilla, and Sevilla missed a penalty at 2-1 right at the death to take the game beyond normal time. But yeah, Dembélé, a thunderbolt, like you say, of a strike, and he's somebody that this is going to be a big year for him. He was, you know, just virtually a write-off last season for him, got injured early, was brought in as Neymar's replacement, and now in signing Malcolm, he's under big pressure just to be their kind of, you know, their dribbling demon of a winger, because Malcolm's essentially the same player. So very important for him that he
you can't play Malcolm in the middle. Sorry.
Well, yeah, no, I don't think you can, Max, actually, no. But you're right.
Should we just go? Shall I go now? Get Nat Coombs, come on.
It was a big result really for Barcelona, in respect that Dembélé played well. The game was actually downgraded to a friendly by the Spanish football authorities 24 hours before the start of the game, which annoyed Sevilla particularly. Why? Because it meant that you could play more non-EU players, because Philippe Coutinho is about to become Portuguese in terms of the passport laws in Spain. And so Barcelona will have be able to play Vidal and various other non-EU players. So, yeah, it was downgraded. Sevilla particularly unhappy about that.
Liam says, can we dedicate the pod discussion to Cazorla's unveiling at Villarreal in a big test tube by a magician?
Maurizio Sarri underneath it blowing cigarette smoke. Maurizio Sarri.
Precisely not Sarri, because he doesn't have any cigarette smoke to blow.
Maurizio Sarri and Dot Cotton just blowing Rothman smoke up through the floor. Yeah, it was quite something.
It was. I mean, you do wonder, you know, when they, you know, Santi signs and they go, oh, look, yeah, we've got this idea. Do you mind basically being part of Spain's Got Talent? You know, like, surely, you know, Cazorla, I mean, I say he seems quite an easygoing, nice chap, and we're all very pleased that, you know, he's earned a contract there. But what do you go? So you want me to get in a, be unveiled by a cheap magician? It was very strange. The world is strange.
While locked in a glass tube full of dry ice or smoke.
The one thing it didn't look was cheap.
Yes, that's a very good point.
That must have cost some coin as well.
Do you say he might have said, can I not just have that money? I'll just walk out and wave and do some
juggle the ball.
Yeah. And we can maybe just put that to better use. Ligue 1, Mark, anything exciting happened? No draws on the opening weekend.
No, I mean, they say Ligue 1 or League 1 for a reason, because nobody scores more than once other than PSG. But I mean, PSG were easy winners. Took Neymar 10 minutes to open his account for the season. But Tim Ware, the son of George, he was sort of the star act, if you like, in terms of grabbing the headlines. He took advantage of a goalkeeping error to tap home a goal, where PSG played a lot of young players because most of their World Cup stars not yet deemed ready for action.
The German Super Cup, Archie, Eintracht Frankfurt 0, Bayern Munich 5. So an exciting season ahead then in Germany.
Another competitive season. No, I actually do think that this season will be more competitive in the Bundesliga. I think that game, I mean, Bayern didn't really need to up their level all that much. I mean, it wasn't like they were creating anything at all. The goal that Robert Lewandowski scored was just a simple cross into the middle, and from there, kind of, it still wasn't... I would say Bayern took 5 of about 7 chances. They were just very clinical. But in the Bundesliga this season, I think it will be an interesting campaign ahead, because I think you're going to see improvements from
major improvements from the sides behind Bayern. The question is, can the rest of the Bundesliga, in terms of those top sides, be as clinical when they're trying to put away the rest of the division? And that is where Bayern Munich kind of make up all their ground. But particularly with Julian Nagelsmann in his final year at Hoffenheim, Domenico Tedesco taking Schalke into the Champions League, two young coaches in their 30s there. Leverkusen will be strong. I guess partly out of hope, I would like to see a more competitive title race. But I honestly think that, particularly with Bayern, Arjen Robben and Frank Ribery are really not getting any younger. And you can kind of see that even last night. They weren't really making all that much of an impact. Although Robben did play a hand in one of the goals. I question how good they will be. I think Niko Kovac is a better coach than touted, but...
And obviously,
stick with us for the Bundesliga. Yeah.
Kovac went from Frankfurt to Bayern, and obviously won the cup with Frankfurt, and then went off to Bayern. Was he treated well and regarded highly by the Frankfurt fans and players there? Were there lots of hugs around?
Yeah, it's a difficult situation because he kind of went behind Frankfurt's back in terms of the way that he got appointed there. It came as very much as a surprise to Frankfurt. They were told, kind of within hours, that he was going to be the new Bayern coach, and they kind of threw their hands up. So it was a difficult situation there, but he will be forever remembered very warmly now, I would say. The cup final has changed everything, because that was Eintracht Frankfurt's first cup win in 30 years.
It was their cup final.
Yeah, it was literally, well, I mean, it was their second cup final in a row. The progress they made under him, the fact that they stayed up against the odds in the first season, then they reached the cup final the previous season, and then won it this year against Bayern Munich. Fantastic achievement. I mean, his Eintracht Frankfurt side effectively were the German answer to Atletico Madrid. And I mean, I think the thing to look out for now is, how will that translate to Bayern? How is he going to be able to play with having that much more of the ball? Where are his ideas going to come from? Because I still look at Pep Guardiola in terms of the gold standard that was set in terms of the style of play, not necessarily for winning most trophies, that was Jupp Heynckes. But now Bayern have effectively used their Fona Jupp Heynckes option, if you will. It's now a little bit more pressure for whoever the next coach is, because the next solution, if Kovac fails, I don't know where that comes from. I think they've missed a trick not getting Julian Nagelsmann nailed down, because Nagelsmann was announced this summer that he'll go to Leipzig next summer. In the meantime, Ralf Rangnick will fill in there for the year or so. So I think a transitional year ahead for Bayern. I don't know whether they are, I mean, quite as much as favourites as they have been in previous years.
Henry says, sure you'll give a nod to Wayne Rooney's assist today, even if it's lowly MLS. Barry, nod to it.
Well, nodding doesn't really do it justice on an audio medium, but it was incredible. He just to set the scene, he's playing for DC United. They're playing against Orlando. It's 2-2. Fourth, fifth minute of added time. DC United have a corner. Their goalkeeper has gone up. So they need a result. You know, they need a win. They need a win. And Orlando break. There's a player galloping into the, towards the, or he gallops into the DC United half. Rooney's tracking back at a rate of speed I haven't seen him reach in a very long time. Dispossesses this player with a tidy tackle. And, you know, the player had work to do, but he was basically trying to set himself to shoot into an empty goal. Rooney tackles him cleanly, brilliant tackle, gets the ball, moves about 10 metres up the field and just sends this wonderful diagonal cross from deep towards the edge of the six-yard box. And his teammate, Luciana Costa, 5'3" tall, shortest man on the field, scores a late winner with a header. So, you know, not only did Rooney save a goal, but he set up the winner for his team. It was quite remarkable. Seek it out on YouTube, because I really haven't done it justice.
And also nice, because when they celebrate, Rooney is clearly too knackered to say it. And just goes, oh, cheers, and then just lies down on the floor.
I mean, the tackle alone would have been brilliant.
Yeah.
That would have gone viral. But to then have A, the energy, and B, the gumption to set up the winner, was amazing.
In the under 20 Women's World Cup, England are through to the quarterfinals to face the Netherlands. They beat Mexico 6-1 in their final group game to secure qualification, which included a hat-trick from Lauren Hemp. She completed her hat-trick with a quite ridiculous goal where she nicks it past the keeper and is almost taken down or slips at the same time, lands on the ball and sort of exerts... It's a bit like playing a punch shot with a 7-iron. And it's sort of it's not really a golf shot. It's very hard to know how would anyone describe this. She lies on it. What I used to do with Sabutio balls, right, is when I was bored of playing Sabutio, which is very soon after you set up the pitch, is just press really hard down on the ball and see if you could flick it and then backspin it all the way back to you. And she lies on it with her side, and it pops out, goes into the goal, and it had a lot of backspin on it. So, you know, it would have been like a putt at Augusta. So there's a mixture of analogies. Just go and watch the bloody thing, all right? The Libertines are sponsoring Margate FC. Well done to Pete Doherty and who's the other one?
Oh, I can't remember. Oh, Carl Barrett.
Carl Barrett, yes. He was
They have a hotel. They've bought a hotel in Margate. I saw it when I was there a few weeks ago. It's currently being renovated. And a pal of mine saw Pete Doherty out walking his dog while riding a BMX, so lazy man's dog walking. So they've obviously set home down in Margate.
Archie, put your hand up. Yes. Do you need the toilet or
do you want some trivia?
Yes, please.
Do you want some more trivia,
ladies and gentlemen? It's time for what's this? Archie's Margate trivia.
Yeah. No. Pete Doherty trivia.
Ah, Archie's Pete Doherty trivia.
You know he's a massive.
What?
He's a massive fan of German third division side KFC Uerdingen.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Any reason?
I believe it's because he grew up there.
Oh.
And he used to write for a QPR fanzine.
He's a plastic fan, but not a glory hunter, clearly. Well, thanks, Archie.
There is more detail to that, which
okay, yes.
I need to remember.
But. Okay, well, maybe when you come back next time.
Yeah, sure. Finally,
I tweeted this out this morning. A wonderful foul from the a game between Tanzania and Burundi under-17s that I just happened to be watching. Tanzania are in blue, Burundi are in green. I can't remember who committed the foul. I think it's a Burundi foul on a Tanzanian player. It's right in the corner. The only way I can describe this is, who were the two, Ryu and Ken? Were they the two sort of normal ones from Street Fighter 2? Oh, yeah. And if you pressed the right buttons enough, they would do a spinning kick around and around and around. Yeah. The balls nip past him, and he jumps up around and manages to kick the guy in the neck. And then as he lands, he runs back, jogs back and stamps on him. And then, please say he does the I got the ball ref. he does, yeah. He goes up. I got the ball. No, you didn't. You did a spinning roundhouse kick and then stamped on the man and then points at the ball afterwards. It's really marvellous. The commentators are in hysterics. Obviously, to the kids listening, that's not how you should play the game. There were 25 seconds left of injury time in the game at the time with Tanzania 2-1 up. Yeah. It's 25 seconds left of injury time. Tanzania are 2-1 up and Mr. Burundi... basically kills someone.
We're sort of finishing this pod by really badly describing a lot of different things people really need to see for themselves.
Yes. Adam says, did Barry...
Interspersed with fairly mediocre Rin Tutt anecdotes and observations.
And you know what?
I'm thinking we're going out with a whimper.
Yeah, I've definitely been breathing in part three as well. Adam says, did Barry remember to call his family this week?
I will be calling them today because it's my father's birthday. So happy birthday, Sam.
Happy birthday, Mr. Glendo. And finally, Miles says, Matt Letizier said on the Quickly Kevin podcast that unfortunately the players didn't get any complimentary Draper tools. As we were discussing last week. But next time I speak to Matt Letizier, I will find out exactly how many Dimplex heaters he has. Mark, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Max.
Archie, thank you for your time and thank you for your anecdotes.
More next time.
Thanks, Baz.
You're welcome.
Back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.